Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Ear to the Ground Sports Podcast on blogtalkradio.com. It is Thursday, January 21st, 2021. Ones and twos are wild in the date today. We are going old school. It's Thursday this week. Little work in progress, but we're going old school today, which means good friend John Crow is on the other side of the line. Let's bring him in on our Ear to the Ground Sports Podcast. JC, how are you, man? It's championship weekend. You're ripping up it all?
What's up? We've got championship weekend for you, and you must be excited and on pins and needles with your man Patrick Mahomes, huh?
Yeah, pins and needles it is, too. And before we get into that, and first of all, programming note, we're expected to be joined by Jarvis Green for a little quick hit, probably for like 15, 20 minutes. And we all know who he is, a good friend of the show, a former Patriots offensive lineman and a two-time Super Bowl champion. He now is Ocean97.com, his own entrepreneur, and he's on to something better. That's not better, just something different. It's called Chef, the number two, the letter U, Chef to you, and he'll talk about that when he gets here shortly. But, yeah, I'm pretty excited, JC. You know, Thursday, so we're going to find out a lot more about Mahomes. But just looking back at that, you know, it wasn't your normal concussion. It didn't look like his head was slammed to the ground, more like the neck area, and there was some trauma there in the neck. And with all the nerve endings and all the, glands and stuff like that, it may have just kind of knocked his equilibrium off a little bit because it seemed to be. He got up a little woozy. Ended up jogging to the locker room. So I'm hopeful that he plays. I think he will play, but we'll know more in the next 24, 36 hours for sure.
Yeah, I would be shocked if the business of football did not allow him to play, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
And I kind of put that in the category of, you know what, you're not going to see any COVID-related testing positives with any of the quarterbacks over the next 4 days and – you know what? They will power through anything to get through Sunday and then 2 weeks for Super Bowl in Tampa. So, you know, if I'm Buffalo, I'm preparing for Mr. Patrick Mahomes.
Exactly. I agree with you. He's John Crow and Johnny Sunchips. We are the Unsung Sports Grid on our E2G Sports Network, which is the old school podcast with Chips and Crow on the on blogtalkradio.com. We're waiting on Jarvis Green, but we'll pontificate because this is my, you know, Super Bowl notwithstanding, this is my favorite football day of the year. Two trophies are awarded to two conferences and four really, really good teams. And all the storylines with the quarterbacks, the young guys in the AFC, the older goats, if you will, in the NFC. Aaron Rodgers going for multiple wins in Super Bowls and getting out of that, you know, once again, a crooked number up there as well. Brady going for his 10th Super Bowl appearance. It's the storylines are incredible. Just going into this championship weekend, Buffalo, a great story. Going back to the olden days in the 90s, looking to get to a Super Bowl since then, monkey off their back. Chiefs are coming off their third consecutive championship game after having gone their history of not playing one at home. They have going into their third consecutive at home. So the storylines, man, are boundless. And it's just a great day of football. Like I said, it's my favorite. Championship weekend in the NFL is my favorite of the year. And with all those storylines, it does not get any better than this.
Yeah, it's a great day of football, and hopefully the games match up to that. And, you know, we do have a couple of rematches, you know. At the time when the Packers and Bucks met in Tampa week six, you know, the Packers are rolling, undefeated, and, you know, they had a 10-0 lead in that game. And then, boom, all of a sudden, you know, Rodgers throws a pick and, you know, 38 more points, and, you know, that game's over. And same thing on the Bills side, you know, Bills and Chiefs are rematch from their game in Buffalo where the Chiefs are pounded the crap out of the ball, you know,
right,
for 245 yards. So it will be interesting to see the adjustments because, you know they're coming and, you know, both pretty good coaches on all sides. So you know that those adjustments should be made. It's just who can then make the adjustments to the adjustments.
Right. Over the NFC, obviously Green Bay, two straight years in the championship game, Tampa Bay with Brady. The expectations were high. I don't know if we talked about this, but if we have, I apologize, but refresh me. When Tampa Bay signed Tom Brady, was it Super Bowl or bust in your mind, JC? Because I didn't think it was at the time. Maybe more so when they added Antonio Brown, be it if it was going to be a destructive, but if he, Brown would kind of be a nice boy, so to speak, with him in his addition to an already potent offense, they were, to me, that made him a favorite to go to the Super Bowl then. But before Antonio Brown, just signing Tom Brady, were they a Super Bowl or bust team in your mind?
I think so. I think Tom went there knowing he had the weapons to get there, to get it done. And, he was only going to go to some place where he could compete for that Super Bowl. Now, did he think he was the favorite? Obviously, with the Saints in that division, it was going to be a little bit harder. But, it kind of played out how we thought it would, where we thought the Saints would win the division. But we knew with the way the schedule was laid out, Tampa would ultimately get in their groove. And, hey, they have now won the game that they weren't expected to win going into New Orleans. And, they dominated that fourth quarter, man. The Saints had it. Even without Breeze and all of his injuries, according to his wife, with the torn rotator cuff, with the broken ribs, with all that stuff. And I hate when they come out after the season and say, I had so many more injuries than what I had. Listen, you played, okay? So you thought you were well enough to play. But it was obvious. He had no fire on, no velocity on that ball. Couldn't throw it past 10, 15 yards. But still, there they had the lead. They had a 7-point lead. They throw it to Jared Cook. He's rumbling towards the Bucs 40, and boom, great play by the Buckfield and White to get the ball out. And it was all sayonara after that. But the Bucs are rolling, man. But let's be honest. The passing attack they're going to face this week is nothing like what they faced last week in New Orleans. So we'll see the real Bucs defense this week, as opposed to last week. And they just load up the box, man. Last week, they stopped Kamara, which they did, outside one or two runs. They stopped him. But they knew Drew Brees wasn't throwing pass. I mean, heck, they had to bring in Jameis Winston to throw a 30-yard pass last week. So Aaron Rodgers is going to toss the ball all over the place. The thing for the Packers is, can Aaron Jones get the run game going?
Right.
And A.J. Dillon, if he's back as well, and Williams.
Right.
Can they get it going? Because the Bucs have done a very good job, number one against the rush all year. So that'll be interesting to see.
John Crow, Johnny Sunchips here for you. E2G Sports Network, the Unsung Sports Grid. We're waiting on Jarvis Green. In the meantime, we'll talk some football, as you will, when he joins us in just a few moments. It's the Old School Podcast on blogtalkradio.com. You talk about Breeze, and we talked to Jarvis about that when the Saints fell to 9-3, and all of a sudden Breeze, with 4 weeks after that horrific injury, he's back in. And we talked about that, and Jarvis will attest to that. He thought that was a desperate move, and I agree with him at the time. They were desperate for that. Why bring him back if he's not healthy and nurse him back into health? Having said that, I wonder if that just – because they hadn't been the same team offensively since, because it was all – Alvin Kamara, 6 touchdowns a couple weeks later. You could tell the shift of that offense was not Michael Thomas and Breeze anymore. It was all Alvin Kamara, and he's been a big part of it, but it was all. That offense is going as far as Alvin Kamara could take him. And I think that came back to bite him in the you-know-what. I mean, Taysom Hill was not available for this game, but Jameis Winston may have been a better option just because he's a healthier sort of guy. I just don't know that, but I think that was a detriment to the Saints, and that desperation – in week 14 was, I think it came back to bite them in the you-know-what and paying the price for it. And, oh, by the way, again, big games like this, you have to hold on to the ball. Credit Tampa Bay for taking the opportunities given them and making and capitalizing to the tune of 21 points and 4 turnovers. But you turn the ball over like that in game, in the playoffs, like that against a team and a quarterback like Brady, you're going to pay, and pay they did. And those 4 turnovers, the most important stat of the game in the box score.
Oh, no question. You just can't. They're lucky they were hanging around, turning the ball over 4 times. And, the Bucs with no turnovers, took care of the ball. And we said it last week, previewing the game. Your big studs have to pick, have to step up in a big game. And Michael Thomas, still MIA after that game.
Yeah.
At least Kamara stepped up a little bit. Drew Brees gritted it out, but Michael Thomas was a complete no-show in that game. Listen, I get you're going to be held down a little bit, but you've got to have a catch, man.
Right. Right.
He was invisible that entire game.
And you know, Michael Thomas, you talk about that. Remember during the preseason with all the unrest and the civil unrest, and Brady Breeze made a comment at the time. I didn't think it was a major deal, but Michael Thomas took offense to it and went out. I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but there seemed to be a separation of church and state there between Breeze and Thomas. He actually came out on, you know, and you heard the sound clip way back then. He kind of criticized Breeze and may have thrown the F-bomb into just, you know, you got to say the right thing once in a while. I wonder if that just was kind of permeated all season long with Breeze and may have manifested at some point during the year. Because I remember saying at that time that divide between Thomas and Breeze, for whatever reason, could come back to haunt him and could really kind of derail their season. And I'm not so sure it did, but maybe it did towards the end, because when dissension sets in and he gets hurt and he's not getting the ball and Breeze is, I mean, not that they were losing, but he wasn't getting the ball that much. I wonder if he lost a little bit of his zest and vigor, not condoning that, but I wonder if that had played any part to do with it, hindsight being 2020 and all.
Yeah, let's be honest. You know, 1 year ago, he's being talked about as, you know, the number one stud in the NFL from the wide receiver group. And, you know, now that's not the case. You know, with all the injuries right from the get-go. And then, you know, you look at a guy that is still playing this week, and Davante Adams, he's up against number one each and every week, and he's putting up one and multiple touchdowns, 100 yards, 10 catches each and every week, because you know what? Aaron Rodgers does not go away from his stud.
He doesn't.
A few years ago, now he knows, listen, I'm going to figure out a way to get you the ball no matter what. And that's why they're back in the NFC Championship game this week, because they know. We'll figure out a way to scheme it to get them the ball, because if we don't, we can't win.
I agree with you. He's John Crow, Johnny Sanchez, swinging on Jarvis Green to join us on the E2G Sports Network. Unsung Sports Grid is what we are. This is the Old School Podcast, January 21st, 2021. We're coming to you live at approximately 1:12 p.m. Eastern Time here on this Thursday afternoon on blogtalkradio.com. But, you know, you talk about a team like Rodgers, and their defense, he's obviously been more than steady the past years, but now behind Za'Darius Smith, he's got a defense now that can go out and make plays. And all Smith did last week was get a quarterback sack for his sixth consecutive game. That's a big plus in Green Bay's run this year, albeit they went 13-3 last year. Nobody talked about them as they went to a championship game. But their defense is pretty stout this year, and they have playmakers who can do it. And that's what favors Green Bay over Tampa Bay, in my mind, this year as opposed to the last couple of years. Just the defense is right there.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And you know, they now know that, you know, unlike last year where, you know, they weren't so sure, you know, was it really the offense that was getting there year one of Matt LaFleur, you know, was that going to work? They've been very opportunistic. They've gotten a great pass rush, and they've gotten it done. And they couldn't have looked at it any better as far as Sunday when it comes to it. They have the NFC Championship game at home, unlike last year. They have cold weather coming. They have snow coming. And listen, it's a revenge game against Tom Brady in the Bucs. I mean, you couldn't serve it up better for a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And let's be honest, who wants to be the team that let Tom Brady go host a Super Bowl in his home stadium and add another first to do on his list? It will be unsuffering if that happens, believe me.
Agreed. And you know, you talk about legacies, and Brady's just cemented there. But if he goes into Green Bay and beats Aaron Rodgers this year, and Aaron Rodgers, arguably the MVP, I mean, it's not official, that he's mine if I'm voting for one. That's just another feather in his cap in an already astounding career, to go to his 10th Super Bowl and take a team for the first year he's with them, granted the weapons are there, all the way to a Super Bowl in his home stadium, which I believe has never been done. I think the closest it's been, 1979, the LA Rams played in Pasadena. I think that's the only time it's been really close, but I could be wrong with that. My memory serves me correctly. But
no, you're right.
Would that add to Tom Brady's legacy? Go ahead.
Oh, of course. Of course. And you are right. It was the Rams who had moved on to Anaheim at that point.
Right.
Playing in their former home, the LA Coliseum, just up the road. So, yeah, I mean, instead of being the GOAT, he would be the GOAT. Because he'd be the greatest of all time. Because, I don't think there's any debate that he's the greatest quarterback of all time. I won't go as far as saying the greatest player of all time, because then you're starting to compare him up against, the guys, like Jimmy Brown and, those types of guys. I don't think it's a fair comparison. But as far as being the greatest quarterback of all time, that thing is cemented. That's over. But in his thing, he's got two things he can do. By beating Green Bay, he can be the first quarterback ever to host the Super Bowl in Tampa. And then two, if he gets the seventh Super Bowl title, he'll have seven titles. Michael Jordan had six. And that's what he's always pointed to having more than Michael.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty interesting, too, when you think about it. Yeah, that legacy even improved is incredible. So, yeah, that's interesting, too. So it's going to be a great showdown. And I think, like last week, New Orleans, Tom Brady wasn't vintage Brady, but what's vintage Brady now? He's still pretty solid at 43. He did what he can. If you give him an opportunity like New Orleans did, if you're Green Bay, he's going to capitalize. It's just the way he is. And it wipe out all the other stuff, like you said, the not beating a winning team outside of Green Bay until last week at New Orleans in a divisional round game. That's all out the window now. It's a one-game situation. And with him under center, anything can happen. And it should be an epic battle in the NFC. And I'm looking forward to it as well. And that's the early game on Sunday. The night game has the Buffalo Bills traveling to Kansas City. And I want to get your thoughts on Kansas City, but I'll be the first to say that I think I lost 6 months of my life on the Chiefs Brown game. Tell me what Andy Reid and what Andy Reid said to that offense with that fourth and one. I think two things. I think Andy Reid, deep down inside him, he never admit it, knew that if they punted that ball and play conservative, good chance Cleveland's going to come down with a chance to win the game, number one. Number two is he made that team think, at least the offense, listen, you guys are good enough to do this without Patrick Mahomes, a quarterback. Now go out and get it done. If you're a championship team, pick up a doggone yard. And they did. And it was a great moment, anticipated moment. But I think he may have galvanized that offense on a whole outside of Patrick Mahomes a little bit more with that play, because he showed faith in them. And I liked what he said to from a coaching standpoint. Your thoughts on that too, because that was a gutsy call. And not a lot of coaches would have made that.
Yeah, and I'll take it even one play before, because I was shocked. 3rd and 14, just after the 2-minute warning, I was shocked that he didn't just hand the ball off, take 40 seconds off the clock, punt the ball back with about $1.10, $1.15 left to go, and see if the Browns could go the entire length of the field to get a touchdown. So I was shocked he went and dropped Penny back. And when he ran for it, and I'll be honest with you, I still think he got the first down. I don't think he got the fourth down.
Yeah.
But that's neither here than this. But hey, the dude's playing with house money now that he's won Super Bowl. That monkey's off his back about not winning the big one. Now he's in that upper echelon of coaches. And he always was, but that championship just validates you. So now fourth and an inch to go to the AFC Championship game. Do it, man. And he did it. And kudos to him, because that just, how much confidence does that put in your team just moving forward, not even just the back game, but moving forward that, hey, if we have to play next week without Mahomes, we're good. We're good. We're not changing much. Even with Penny's, errant interception into the end zone before that, he's still on 3rd and 14, showed faith that he would make the right decision. And if you're a Patriots fan, doesn't it just make you go, because you know what? Backup quarterback in Arrowhead, big moment. Can he make the right play? Chad Henne did. Brian Hoyer didn't. Two teams going totally separate ways.
No question about it, and it's just Cleveland played such a good game offensively and defensively for that matter. They're a solid team, well coached that game, but that game was really impressive. So we'll see what happens with them. I'm so a little iffy about. I think that, and tell me about this. We talked last week on Sunday before the game that it was Le'Veon Bell's day, and maybe he's just not fitting into that offense, but Darrell Williams was a spark plug in the backfield for that team. I'm not sure. I haven't checked, and I don't know if you can set that to this. I didn't know Edwards-Alaire's status up until now. I'm not sure about it, but if he doesn't play, you may see a little bit more of Darrell Williams than you would of Le'Veon Bell, at least to be the handoff. Your opinion on that? Because I thought Le'Veon Bell, I thought that was his game to show up. Is there something missing from him, John, that you're not seeing? Because he's in a great offense due to style.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, Williams got the start. So, obviously, he's showing Andy Reid something that, you know, I'm just not going to lead on the vet and just be safe with it. So,
right. He's
seeing it with Williams, and he got it done for him. And an update from Chiefs practice today, Le'Veon Bell with the knee not on the field today.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Mahomes is back out there, so he has not been cleared yet, but he is back out there. So I agree with that. I look for Williams to get the start again because, listen, you got Bell as a safety net, but he hasn't been the same guy that you thought you were getting. So you know what? Rely on the guy that's getting the job done at this point in time. Don't worry about the name on the back of the jersey. Just ride the hot hand, and that's what they're doing. So it'll be interesting to see if Mahomes gets cleared later today. Or if they, you know, kind of keep it for another day.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I agree with you on Bell. He'll be the backup. He'll get his, you know, 10, 12 touches. But I think it's Williams to go.
I agree with you. John Crow, Johnny Sunship's there. Jarvis just texted in. He's in a meeting at Dome. So as soon as he's done, he's going to check in with us. This is the Ear to the Ground Sports Podcast on blogtalkradio.com. We're coming live at 1:21 p.m. Eastern Time on Boy, talk about 1-2-1s. 1:21 p.m. Eastern Time on 1/21/2021. Boy, ones and twos are the number, man. Play it in your lottery.
Exactly.
Ones and twos. 1-2-1, 1-2-1, 2021. Love it. Oh, my goodness, the number game.
And sadly, I didn't win the Powerball last night. And somebody in Maryland won it.
Yes. Yes, me too, John.
$1 million.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Because if I had won it, there's a good chance you and I would probably be – We'd probably reschedule the show for maybe somewhere in a tropical island later on during the week, right? Actually, probably Sunday. So, right? So you wouldn't even be on the right now. But, yeah, exactly. Again, he's John Crow. Johnny Sanchez.
Let me ask you, going back to that Chiefs game that late in that fourth quarter, were you surprised Stefanski, who just got voted the Coach of the Year for the AP today,
mm-hmm.
were you surprised he punted that ball back with about 3 minutes left?
Say it again, John. You went out. Surprised at what?
Were you surprised Stefanski punted that ball back to the Chiefs with about 3 or 4 minutes left?
Yeah, I am, actually. Yeah, I am. I am. I mean, because at some point, you know what? You go for it, right? I mean, that's a team playing with house money. I agree. Does he have faith in his defense? Sure. And if it was Mahomes at quarterback, I don't think he punts it, number one. But having said that, you're still the Cleveland Browns, man. You lose, you're fine. You had a great year. You're monkey off the back. You won your first playoff game since 2002, right? You won for a long time for since then. But, you're playing with house money. I was a little surprised at that. I was thankful when it happened. That's what I said to myself. We shouldn't be punting now. At some point, you go for it. You roll the dice, man. And I was a little surprised at that. I can understand his thinking in a way, but because he's trying to instill, I mean, his team's playing well. They're down by 5 in the fourth quarter. If you had said that to Stefanski at the beginning of the game, he would have taken it and ran with it. But he showed he had faith in his defense. But what he didn't know was a quarterback and a ballsy coach on the other side. But, I was a little surprised at that. Yeah, I definitely was. I'm assuming you were as well.
I was, and, you know, I said, you know what, you've gotten your team back in the game. Give it one more shot at it.
Yeah.
And they just never got it back. And by the way, another update from Chiefs practice, your boy Edwards-Alaire is at practice. So
he is rock. Nice.
He is.
That's good. That's good to see because that changes that whole offense.
Sammy Watkins are back. Yeah.
I like that. So
good news
that's good
for
stuff. Yeah, I'm pretty excited. So that's good. I want to see both teams play on all cylinders. Let's move over to the other side, the visiting team, Buffalo. Another team you could argue playing with house money, making that climb, making that step. With each win they get, they seem to carving out another niche in their in this climb that they're making. And, you know, you're looking at a Buffalo team and Josh Allen coming out there, underdogs, probably with a little chip on their shoulder, with a little swag. Coaching staff doing really well. Two things. What do you think their approach is? Or do they stay with what they're going at? Do they try to – I mean, last week they came out, they did not run the ball one time in the first quarter last week, Buffalo. Do you think they stay that same way and churn and go with what's going working for them as well?
Yeah, I got to think they're a little bit more balanced. They ran the ball three times in that entire first half last week and one with the quarterback sneak. At the end on a third down. So
right.
I think they got to be a little bit more balanced because you can't have Josh Allen back there, you know, 45, 50 times a game against this Chiefs tackle. That's just
right.
not going to get it done.
Right.
I mean, he had a tough time, you know, in the earlier matchup, only threw for about $120 through a pick. So, I mean, they got to get something out of that running game. Even if it's just to set it up, use the attempt. You cannot be like what the Bucs did earlier this year where they ran the ball five times against the Saints. You got to have some balance in it just to keep it on. Or else it could be an early day for the Bills.
Right, I agree. He's John Crome, Johnny Sunchips, blogtalkradio.com. This is the E2G Sports Network, our old school podcast with us coming at you on January 21st, 2021, coming live at about 1:26 p.m. Eastern time. You know, you talk about the quarterbacks, you know, Allen, Mahomes on the AFC side, Brady, Rodgers on the NFC side. But if you look at some of the wide receivers on both sides, it's an all-star cast of wide receivers in both conferences on all four teams.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Devontae Adams, Judd. Best receiver in the game right now, at least playing-wise, with Julio Jones being injured most of the season. But, yeah, I mean, but they've also, you know, they are studs. You got Adams on one side, Mike Evans on the other. But you've got the complementary guys. You've got Godwin to go along with Evans. Antonio Brown, if he plays and he did not practice today, you know, he'll be a game-time decision. But when he's healthy, one of the best of all time out there. You have Gronk. On the other side, for the Packers, you've got Dalvin, you've got Runyon, and, you know, Robert Tonyan.
Right.
And I'm thinking of Runyon from the old Tennessee Titans phase.
And it's not playing for Green Bay, doesn't
he? Compliment. What's that?
Right. I said, doesn't Runyon's son play for Green Bay? Right.
He does. So... it's, you know, that's what is making it so that you don't have, you know, someone to key on. And they both got great run games. I mean, you know, playoff Lenny, Leonard Fournette, you know, having a resurgence there for the Bucs. And, you know, it's not too bad to have, having Jones as kind of a backup because Fournette has been a couple of games carrying the rock for the Bucs.
Right.
And, of course, you got Aaron Jones on the other side for the Packers. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, the cream of the crop when it comes to offenses in the NFC. And, of course, you know full well the Chiefs, you know, the only people that stop them are themselves.
Right. I agree. Yeah, and you know what? You know, and Kelsey's really turned himself around again. He was always called a wide receiver in a tight end's body or a tight end in a wide receiver's body, but he's doing a better job. And what I didn't see from him early on was his blocking skills. He's doing a better job of blocking, and he's becoming more of an all-around tight end, and he's just continues to have a monster season. But, you know, the talent in both games at the key positions is really, really intriguing, and it's just fun to watch. I mean, it's like a Tecmo Bowl fantasy football game come together on both sides of the ball. But that's going to be interesting, too, what we see. And I can't wait to Championship Sunday. Once again, he's John Crome. Johnny, just waiting on Jarvis Green to call in. But, John, I want to get to a couple of items. And one, I talked to our buddy Joe Foran just yesterday, actually, on our Pump Day podcast. And Josh McDaniels, and your opinion on him. And I'll tell you mine. And I don't know if I told you before. I think he's overrated. I think the sham in Denver, although it was a long time ago, was really, really eye-opening to some with the whole Jay Cutler, Tim Tebow thing, the alienating the team. And he's had success under Tom Brady as offensive coordinator in New England, has been on the short list of many head coaching jobs in many offseasons. We know what he did in Indianapolis. I said it then, and I'll say it now. based on what he did in Indianapolis, in the coaching fraternity, that is the NFL, I don't see him walking the sidelines as a head coach ever again because of that, because of what he did, leaving his assistant coaches basically at the altar while he came back to New England again. And I said it then, I said it now, and I want your opinion on it. I think the only time he walks the sidelines as head coach would be in a Patriot, on the Patriot sidelines, albeit he's in the running for Deuce Staley, you know, with Deuce Staley for the Eagles job. But when you see a guy like Dan Campbell get 6 years in Detroit, what does that say about Josh McDaniels? And, oh, by the way, the boom's off his rose because he couldn't handle that offense this season. Just your thoughts on where you see McDaniels coach ever and what you're taking him as offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, what he did with Indy, you know, sticks in the craws of some people around the NFL. And I think owners and executives have short-term memory. And I think if, you know, the right situation, I mean, look at Philadelphia right now. According to, you know, Roseman likes him, Jeffrey Lurie does not.
Right.
Last time I checked, Jeffrey Lurie is the owner. So you know, yeah, you kind of know how that's going to go.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, and it's the only interview that he's done. And now you get reports that, you know, Deuce Staley interviewed after him. Eric Bieniemy was contacted for an interview after Josh. So that kind of speaks volumes. Because all we heard over the, you know, over the weekend was, you know, this 18-hour interview with Josh McDaniels is going really, really well. And, you know, we just got to convince the owner. Well, if it's now 4 days later and you haven't convinced the owner and you haven't announced that the guy's going to get hired, the chances are he's probably not going to get hired in Philadelphia. And I think Josh is a decent head coach. You know, he could be a decent head coach in this NFL.
Right.
You know, as far as the offense, you know, he's given what he's given. You know, I think he got about as much out of what he could do, given Cam Newton, Jacoby Myers, Nikhil Harry, you know, and what their talent level is. You know,
right.
So I don't really knock him for, you know, the win so much because, let's be honest, he just didn't have the talent on his team. When he's had some decent talent, he's been creative with it. You know, even with the trick plays with Cam Newton, they had him. Jermaine Durd couldn't catch him, you know. So I don't knock McDaniels, and you know, all season long we've kind of, you know, ragged him for the high school offense style,
right,
of what the Patriots did this last season. But that was it. That was his best opportunity to win. You know, if he was given somebody else and didn't open it up, then yeah, I guess we can knock him. But you know, I go back to if an owner really has a thing for you, a short-term, you know, memory goes away real fast. But I just wonder where Josh is headed at, where they, you know. Okay, now there are rumblings that Matt Patricia is going to come back, right?
Yep.
And he's not going to be the defensive guy. He's going to be an offensive guy. He's going to help out to either replace McDaniels and help out the offense. Because, again, Patricia started as an offensive guy in New England and then went to the defensive side of the ball.
Right.
But let's be honest. If you're a Patriots fan, wouldn't that scare the bejesus out of you that either he's going to replace McDaniels or he's going to be with McDaniels trying to help him get to a new level of offense? Because, I don't know, last time I checked, his defense is in New England the last, you know, few games. Jacksonville almost came into Foxborough and probably should have beat him. And then the Eagles ran for over 500 yards of offense in the Super Bowl. So,
yep.
You know, I know Bill wants to have his guys, and they love to get him cheap because, you know, he's still getting paid by the Lions, so they can pay him $1,000
Bingo.
Offset. And I would just hate that. I would just love the Patriots to get fresh eyes. Fresh eyes in the front office, fresh eyes in the coaching system. And Belichick's just not open to doing that. I mean, I would love to see ESPN's Lewis Riddick get in that front office. Because he would challenge Bill at every point and get talent back in here.
I agree with you. And on Lewis Riddick, too, before I get on to the coaching staff and son of Belichick and McDaniels, along with Bill. Lewis Riddick, I know that game with Buffalo, that Monday night game, and I said it after, and I was saying it during it. He was waxing poetic about the organization. And it almost told me that he was almost saying, I'm here if you want me. Because I like him a lot. I like his mind. He's been successful before. I think that would be a great, great hire, but you made one thing, you stumbled onto one thing, and one thing that may be important if he's not a hire, that he would challenge Belichick at every chance he got. And that's something we're not sure Bill wants to do right now.
But if we don't get somebody in there, because let's be honest, Bill always says he wants other people's ideas.
Yep.
And I just think everyone in the organization has just shut it off. They're just like, you know what, let Bill do what he needs to do, and, you know, he'll be gone in 4 years. But you can't, in the NFL, you can't waste multiple seasons and expect your fan base to stay resilient with you. This isn't like baseball or a NBA or the NHL. Teams turn around their fortunes in 2 years or less. So we've just gone through a year where it's been abysmal. Mm-hmm. Everybody left. Everybody who left had a little bit of a success out there while the Patriots went backwards. When you look forward, still no answer to any of the questions that anybody wants.
No question.
And you just wonder in their mind, do they want to fix it? Or is it the tried and true that we keep hearing that Belichick only wants to coach guys that he likes? He doesn't want to deal with any problems, and he just wants people around him that he can bring along at his leisure. And to me, as a fan of this team for most of my life, that's not what I want to be signed up for.
No question. And that's what it's about. Yeah, right. I mean, you need to tweak it. You need to change something because, you know, if he gets help, the fix is going to be sooner than later. If he keeps doing the same old thing, put it this way, he's got to change a little bit. He's got to be a little more flexible, in my opinion, just overseeing everything to the point of personnel, to the point of coaching, to the point of, okay, your coordinator is going to do this. Am I going to take my reins out? I need to bring someone to do my GM work for me so I can just coach on the field. He's got to change a little bit. And we're not sure if that's going to happen, but I think that if he does, like you said, they'll be successful sooner than later. But I want to talk to you about Belichick because his feet are being held to the fire. He's being skewered and fricasseed, and he's under the guillotine because he did not do as much as he should have. And you can argue the draft situation, the personnel part of it. We can argue that. I don't think he's made good moves, although he has made some. But why aren't we holding McDaniels to that fire? Why aren't we holding Steve Belichick to the fire? Because before the season started, I was under the impression that because with Newton, I thought it was a good hire, but you weren't sure because he didn't have the reps. With COVID, everything changed in the preseason. Practices, this and that, everything was virtual. So you didn't know what you had until week one. My emphasis and my thought was that this team's defense has to perform well to keep him in games and maybe dictate the success or lack thereof this season. That defense was so up and down, so extreme. Why aren't we talking about Steve Belichick as that, or is it, you know, that Bill Belichick's deal? My point is, he's getting all the blame, and none of the other two guys are.
Yeah, I mean, I think just look at the last name. You know, Bill's got to protect him. And the fact that he doesn't name anybody a defensive coordinator is a ridiculous aspect. I mean, what are we playing, fifth grade? I don't want to give him the title because I don't want to pay him. I mean, you know, let's get over that. Let's have a guy with a title so we know where the blame should go so that if that person doesn't do the job, they can move on. It's ridiculous that we have to wonder, well, we think Belichick is calling Steve Belichick is calling the plays, but maybe Gerard Mayo was doing it for a little while, and then they switched roles, and we don't know. Because let's be honest, we look at the same issue on both sides of the ball. You know, offensively, lost a lot of talent. Defensively, lost a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. This defense, when they won the Super Bowl against the Rams, was the number one defense in the league. And they decided to let a bunch of guys go, including Kyle Van Noy. Not that he's the greatest player ever, but he fits the system. He knows what you need to do. And then you obviously have the COVID dropout with Dante Hightower, with Patrick Chung, and, you know, then everything's off the rails. But I thought Belichick was supposed to be able to put anybody back there. You know, he's been hearing that for 20 years. Patriot way, next guy up. So that's a little bit, I think, why the guys aren't getting the blame, because, to be honest, you and I could come up with 50 to 70 yards of run against that, defensive line, because the studs just weren't there. I mean, Lawrence Guy gutted out that year, being injured almost every week. But there were no big bodies out there.
Right.
You have to blitz run Chase Winovich and Kyle Duggar just to keep your defense in the game, and yet they still run for 150 yards. You know, that's when you know you've lost it. So I don't know where they go with that, but I don't expect Belichick to do anything different defensively, because his son's calling the plays, so he's never going to blame him.
Right. John, Chips and Crow here with you on the Old School Podcast on blogtalkradio.com. We are the Unsung Sports Grid, Ear to the Ground Sports Network, if you will. And, you know, you talk about, Belichick and stuff. And, you know, he's done this, you know, not naming the defensive coordinator. What we're seeing now is the byproduct of winning and losing. He's the same coach. He does the same stuff, throughout his whole tenure here, his whole 20 years. But you lose more than you win, and everything's magnified, and oh, it just doesn't work anymore. The short of that long story is, if you win, everything goes away and people forget about it. If they win two more games or 9-7 and he wouldn't be held to the fire as much. God forbid they win 10-6 and they're in. You lose a couple games, you will go 7-9, and everybody questions everything you do. But the fact is, he's been doing this for his whole tenure, and he's gotten away with it for 20 years, and they have in his organization. My question to you is, are they going to spend, are they going to allocate funds where they should, i.e. Deshaun Watson? You're going to unload millions of dollars for one player as opposed to, you know, band-aiding it with some veterans and stuff like that who are going to come in for less money. Or not less money, but sort of the Plan B agents play. So instead of getting quality, you get quantity of players. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think they lose on both counts, because this is unlike what it used to be in the past, where they can go out and say, you know what, we're not going to make the big splash, but we're going to get those 3-4 veterans to come in there, like they did in the Super Bowl years against Atlanta, against the Rams, where they got a Kyle Van Noy to come in there. They got a Chris Long to come in and get the job done. Now, if you're a free agent, what incentive do you have to come to New England where you know Belichick is going to grind your ass every single day? You're not going to have any fun. And two, you just don't have any chance of winning at a Super Bowl level like you did in the past. And they're not going to pay you top dollar. So what part of the equation is attractive to them then? And so, okay, so you go back to part one of your question, where can they go after Deshaun Watson? Sure. I'd give up 3 first-round picks for Deshaun Watson. Do I think Bill Belichick would? No.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I agree. That's his MO, what he's done. So why would he change that? It's intriguing, because I think they should, and I'm not sure they're going to do it, and Buddy and I talk about this all the time. They have to spend money. I think there's a tax protocol this year. But until they do it, until they spend it wisely, I don't think Bobby wants to do it. That's my other half of this question is – you know, we talk about Bill wanting to spend money, but he's got to get Bobby Kraft, who we know is a businessman, and he has been all along, to be frugal. And I think it's more, instead of Bill Belichick's money, he's got to get the approval from Bobby. It's not just Bill. That's a big misnomer here. Bill doesn't want to spend the money. I think it's Robert Kraft who doesn't want to spend the money, and Bill's got to answer to him. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, then where's Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft? Why aren't they having a press conference like, you know, most of the other owners around the NFL do? Where they, season's over, let's have them all in front of cameras. Let's have them in front of a Zoom camera, you know, because of COVID. You know, where are they? What do they stand on all these issues? You know, what is the goal here? What is, you know, what do we have as options as fans for your organization? You know, they don't seem to be wanting to entertain that at any point, and I agree with you. It is Robert Gaines, because as far as pure dollars, they are always been at the bottom of the league as far as paying what they should as far as cash.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it all gets wiped away because they won the 6 Super Bowl titles, and every move they made was towards that goal. And they had the quarterback who was willing to make less than $25 million a year to do that. So, okay, it worked. But now it's different. So what is the fix? What is the right way to get this team first back to 500, and then two to a playoff competing team.
Mm-hmm.
And there just doesn't seem to be any voice from above, you know, that Robert used to be out there all the time.
Right.
You know, I get that he may not want to be that anymore. And, you know, then let Jonathan do it. Jonathan's never been afraid to share his thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, someone's got to answer that call. And it just goes back to, you know, you can be the best coach all you want. And yes, he's going to make good players great. But if you don't have talent, you can never approach that greatness level. And,
right.
Just looking at the coaching staff, I mean, there's just nobody there with any valid NFL experience outside of the New England organization. And I stand in that respect now because you've only seen it Bill's way. Bill is taking guys from this, that, and the other place.
Right. Like,
you got to work your way up, and I'm not going to give you title, and, you know, I'm not going to pay you. And so they only see it to that prison. There's nobody to challenge him anymore. And if I'm an owner, how can you not see any of that?
Right. Yeah. Maybe he's a quote-unquote a front-running, you know, out there when they're winning. Who knows? But something's got to change. Something has to change big time. And it's going to change sooner than later. So, again, because if they're at right now going into next year, they're wild card at best. And I don't know if you saw the odds to win the Super Bowl, but they're 25th out of 32 teams. I mean, Jacksonville's higher than them. But that's, you know, a couple acquisitions can change that. But the mighty have fallen here in New England on the gridiron. Jarvis is going to reschedule because he can't make it. Isn't a meeting. So a couple questions, JC, before we go. I'm really interested to get your take on these things. There's about 13 minutes left in the show on the Air to the Ground Sports Podcast here on Blog Talk Radio, Chips and Crow with the Old School Podcast. Brian Daboll, you called it. That was good. It would have been a great fit, Herbert and the Chargers. Not the case, number one. Number two, do you think that Buffalo may do like an old New England with Cornell and Weiss and maybe finally throw him big money to stay at that program? We could see Brian Daboll, who's been basically at the front runner to get a head coaching spot, being moving on in the playoffs, spots are being filled. Do we need Brian Daboll as the offensive coordinator next year in Buffalo?
Yeah, he's already said that he's not going any place.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Chargers or Bucks for him. And, you know, if you had told me 4 weeks ago that Eric Bieniemy, Brian Daboll, would not have a job as a head coach in the NFL on January 21st, I'd have been shocked. I mean, those guys are about as good as it gets when it comes to offensive football these days. And why they don't have gigs is beyond me.
Agreed.
Because you could just pencil in Daboll and Herbert for the next 5-6 years. And you would be fine.
You talk about a potential with Daboll and Herbert to be a coach-quarterback combination for years to come. That had success, albeit on paper, at least with Daboll as a head coach, written all over it with a franchise that's on the upswing in a division with Reed, Mahomes, Denver, you can wipe them off of Reed. The Chargers with Daboll and Herbert, Andy Reid with Patrick Mahomes twice a year would, in my opinion, and I'm being biased here in a way, would have been must-see TV. If you're a football fan and a fantasy football fan, it would have been must-see even more. What could have been, man, in that AFC West is something that I wish would have happened as well.
Yeah, and selfishly as a Patriots fan, it would be nice to get him out of the division.
Exactly. But and if you're paid right, and if he comes back and that coaching staff stays intact, hey, you're staring down the barrel of the Miami Buffalo ahead of you, and maybe the Jets could leapfrog you if they do the right thing with Robert Saleh. But Johnny Crow, one more question, John, before we exit out. Phillip Rivers, Hall of Famer or not?
That's a tough one. I think he eventually gets in. He's definitely not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
What is it now? Is it because of Super Bowls?
Yeah, it's in our championship. I mean,
okay.
To me, he's like Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson, of course, should be in the Hall of Fame, right? Just based on pure stats. But again, Calvin Johnson dominated for 7 years. At least Phillip Rivers has the duration, you know, for the length of time that he played. I mean, this dude was a stud. He walked into Foxborough with basically a torn ACL and almost got the Chargers to beat the Patriots. So, I mean, it's not all his fault that they didn't win a championship, but it does count for something that you couldn't get over that. So he's not in the Marino range where, you know, your stats where you're one of the quarterbacks who just changed the game. Philip Rivers didn't change the game, but he had really, really good stats because he played so long. So, but you look through, you know, through that 3 or 4 period where he's just humming that ball off there, throwing picks in big spots. I think he eventually gets in because, you know, look at him versus Eli Manning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Manning should not be a Hall of Fame quarterback. But you know Eli's getting in because of 2 Super Bowls and because of his last name.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing, John.
Gets in because of the duration.
I agree with you. And that's the whole thing. Ironically enough, he retired the day of that championship game against the Patriots with the torn ACL. And if you remember that time, he didn't have his team on his side. And you heard all the quotes come out of that game. He won over his team by going out there because he was this cocky guy, wasn't a team guy, went out there with a torn ACL, played really well. And that kind of changed the image of Philip Rivers, albeit 13 years ago. He's going out to have a real good career. And here's what my point being. It's, you know, you have a guy like Manning in there who's going to get in because of 2 Super Bowls. A guy like Brees who's never been to a Super Bowl and is not going to get in. Much better quarterback, in my opinion, longer than Eli. What's the criteria now? And are we relying too much on Super Bowl appearances, Super Bowl wins? I mean, now you need to get to a Super Bowl. I mean, Stan Humphries got to as many Super Bowls as Dan Marino did. Right. So what's the criteria now? And it's ever changing on what makes a Hall of Fame quarterback a great quarterback. And we know the NFL in their Hall of Fame and can. It's the best of the best. It's not like the NBA. It's the best of the best. And he's just his career. He was an Iron Man. Top 5 in touchdown passes, top 5 in yards, top 5 in attempts. He's right up there with the greats. And I maybe not a first ballot Hall of Famer. If I'm voting, that would be a tough vote to keep him out for me. But what's the criteria, John? Are we paying too much to just Super Bowl wins?
Yeah, I mean, I think it also depends on how long you play. And because it gets, I mean, in this day and age, you know, anybody can throw for 300 yards a game, except for Cam Newton. But the game has changed moving forward. You know, so if Philip Rivers had played in the 80s with those stats, then he's a game changer. So I think if we look at it, again, it's 5 years from now, it's probably going to be him on the ballot along with Drew Brees.
Mm-hmm.
So you know Brees is going to get in.
Right.
Because he's won Super Bowl, he's been a Super Bowl, and he changed the game.
Mm-hmm.
So Rivers will have to wait probably 2 or 3 years, I would think, in order to get in. Because, he just goes back to, he was one of those elite-type quarterbacks, but he just didn't change it enough for me to make him that first ballot guy. I think he should be in. Don't get me wrong. But not first ballot. I think first ballot's going to be special.
Right. Now you mentioned the game changing, and we know it's more of an offensive game. Should Philip Rivers be penalized for the game changing itself and metamorphing itself into a passing game now, and in a league where you pass a 4,000 yards, it's just another year, and is it a matter of penalizing Philip Rivers or something like that because the game has changed and he's adapted to it?
Yeah, he probably is. He probably is knocked a little bit because the game has changed, but I mean, let's dial it up and forecast, Justin Herbert versus Philip Rivers. We could say equal stats just because the game has changed. He could surpass Rivers because he'll be throwing for 350, 400 yards more often because the game is so wide open, because of the way they've changed the rules and just talent level, at wide receiver and quarterback. So he probably is penalized a little bit because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, for me, it's just you got to at least get to one. Because that shows that at least if you get to one, all right, then you've gone above and beyond.
Right.
And that's what really the Hall of Fame should be. It shouldn't just be the really, really good. It should be, like you said, the best of the best.
Right.
And to me, it's always the eye test. And it kills me, you know, what baseball is going to do this year. They'll announce their Hall of Fame class next week, and it's going to be nobody. They're
right.
not going to put anybody in
right.
this year. And it kills me that they're not yep. going to put anybody in, because it's just ridiculous what, you know, what voting has become for
mm-hmm.
For the baseball Hall of Fame. But at least the NFL is a little bit, you know, more in tune. They try to keep it, you know, that standard.
Exactly.
You know, I do think it's at some point, if they keep putting five, the minimum of five every year, if that doesn't change, they're going to run out, you know. They're going to run out in about 10 years.
Yeah, it definitely could run out. I'm going to put my vote in for Stan Humphries because he was in a Super Bowl, and Trent Dilfer because he won one. They should be sure shot locks. Trent Dilfer, Stan Humphries in the Hall of Fame. Right there.
See, that goes the other way. You should be rewarded just for getting there with no
right. No question. I agree. But it's interesting, and you could talk about this for hours because there's really no right or wrong because it's argumentative, it's subjective. But I do want to ask you two things, first of all. All right, 4 minutes left in the show. Before I ask you where people can read your work, which I really like, and you know that for a long time, where they can find JC on social media, where I need to know Super Bowl 55, who do you like to win and move on to Super Bowl 55 in Tampa this weekend?
See, here's where I'm torn, because at the beginning of the playoffs, I picked the Bills against the Packers.
Ooh.
In the Super Bowl.
Right.
But when I look at the game, just the pure game this week, I like the Chiefs over the Bills.
Chiefs and Packers
so
in the Super Bowl.
I do think the Packers will win. I do think they'll win on the NFC side. I just think Rodgers is just on one of those roles where he's going to have enough. He's going to probably throw a couple of picks this weekend. Not going to be clean, but I do think he gets it there. They win probably, you know, 35-27 game. But I really like what the Chiefs have done, you know, with the way they handled that fourth quarter. You know, to end that game. And I do think Patrick Mahomes will be fine. I think they'll get their groove back at home. You know, I love what Buffalo's done. I thought they had a shot. And they still do. Don't get me wrong. But my gut tells me Chiefs Packers in a glorious Tampa Sunday afternoon.
I agree. Yeah, I like that idea. Yeah, two games go either way. Turnovers, penalties are going to be the key. Key turnovers, but you hit on one thing, and that was that people don't realize, and I know the team does, how big that was for Kansas City, the way they managed the fourth quarter with any quarterback. That offense had to really come to grips and say, and you saw Tyreek Hill after, he was pumped up, and that was like a next man up sort of mentality, and that's what I liked about that Kansas City Chiefs team. They hit on something last week that put them on a different plane, and I liked them this week against Buffalo. But I'll give my picks on our Sunday show. But it's going to be Kansas City Green Bay. That's my pick here. But all right, 2 minutes left. Tell people where they can read your work and see the stuff that you have to offer on social media and wherever they can reach you.
Well, this Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon, you'll be able to get my WWE write up for the week on PlaceToBeNation.com. And then Sunday morning, our championship rankings and previews for the games comes out on GoLocalProud.com. And you can always hit me up on Twitter at TheCrowsNestRI.
You got it. I'm going to hear the lovely
actually,
lady say 90.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Crows. Hey, I love
just the
Crows. That's great. Yeah. Good stuff, JC. Man, listen. That's okay. We all have senior moments once in a while, but you got some stuff going on, so we'll go from there. Anyway, that's John Crow. John, thanks for your time, man. I really appreciate it. Always a pleasure, dude.
Thanks, man. It was fun. Thanks
for having me. Ditto. For John Crow, Johnny Sunships, we'll hopefully to do. We don't know yet, but we're going to plan on coming at you next Friday, so to be determined, but we'll see what goes on because we all have lives to lead. And listen, it's been great, guys. Always enjoy the podcast with my good friend and former co-employee at The Score in Providence, John Crow. This has been the Ear to the Ground Sports Podcast on blogtalkradio.com, old school podcast with Chips and Crow. We are the unsung sports grid. Again, if you want to, we didn't do calls today because we were expecting Jarvis to reschedule, but 516-387 1702. Put it in your contacts. We always welcome you on. But Gene C, I'm Johnny Sanchez. Take care. Enjoy your playoff championship weekend, everybody. Be well. Be safe. See you, Johnny.
Thanks, man.
You bet, babe.
Yeah.
Bye.